The truth hurts. The truth is that I'm hurt. I'm starting to understand who I am. But the problem is my heart's built for two and to profile you. Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa. The truth of the matter is that I can do better than you, but I don't want to because I love you. Yeah, you left way too soon.
Hey everyone, it's Erica from theweandme.com. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the We and Me podcast, where we discuss trauma recovery and all things dissociative disorders, specifically DID. Once again, this was Erica, and thanks for joining us. Today, I'm going to be talking about terms that have to do with dissociative identity disorder. So I know that a lot of people get hung up on different terms in regards to how they can discuss this with people who have the disorder, when they're trying to learn different things, when they're trying to support a friend or family member who has the disorder, when they're first learning about it. I know that psychologists also struggle with this, psychiatrists, people who work with patients and work within the mental health community, specifically the trauma community. So there are all sorts of different terms. First of all, let's discuss DID in general. DID is dissociative identity disorder. It was previously known as multiple personality disorder, MPD. That is no longer recognized as a diagnosis. And I know that that's been a struggle for a lot of people who were diagnosed years ago, specifically in the 90s and early 2000s. That was the diagnosis that some of them received, was MPD. The reason that it's no longer called MPD is because it's not a personality disorder. It's a dissociative disorder based in trauma, because without trauma, DID wouldn't exist. And this is something that I do discuss in our Living with DID talks. When we did the course, this was a big topic of conversation with the doctors who took the course. DID is 100% preventable, because without trauma, it doesn't exist. It doesn't manifest. It doesn't manifest later in life. It doesn't come to be without extreme trauma. Sexual, physical, psychological, religious, cult abuse, all of these different types of abuse that people experience in their formative and early developmental years. Without that piece of life, if you're able to develop and hit your regular milestones and make attachments and learn healthy ways to relate to your environment and people in that environment, then you're not going to develop DID. But when that gets interrupted by trauma, that is where DID begins to develop. Another of the terms that a lot of people get hung up on is, well, what do I call you? Are you your personalities, your parts, your headmates? I don't know, the people living in your head, what do I say? So for us, the rule that we go by, and this is just us, this is what we do for my system, and I'll explain that in a minute, we use the term parts. And for me, it's because they are part of me. This is the way it makes sense in my mind. This is the way it makes sense for a lot of other people with DID. However, there are people who don't like that term either. So they use the term alters. But there are also people within the community who that doesn't feel right for. So they use alters, others, headmates, parts, personalities, friends, family, internal family. There are so many different ways. The way that we explain this to people is, if you're, for example, for doctors, if you're working with someone who has DID, then your best bet when you diagnose them is to just discuss that openly, because open communication is one of the biggest things and one of the biggest hurdles that you need to overcome. You need to teach the person how to actually formulate their own thoughts, their processes, and to explain that in a healthy way to other people in their environment. Because that is not something that was learned in many instances. So whether it be a part that you're speaking to or an altar, whatever term you would like to use, or whatever term your patient is using, or whatever term the individual that you're speaking with and working with is utilizing, it's important to discuss those things so that you can all work together in a more productive way by keeping those lines of communication open. Because if you're using a term that someone isn't comfortable with or someone in the system isn't comfortable with, then that may give them less incentive to speak to you, which is vastly problematic when you're trying to work with a DID system. System, another term you've heard us use several times on the podcast and when we do our live videos, the Living with DID talks to any doctors who've participated in those so far, or the faith leaders, and I know that some of you know we've worked with NAMI and the CPD in Chicago. So CPD is the Chicago Police Department, for those who may not be familiar. System, how I define that for people, is the simplest terms that I can come up with has been the collective sum of myself and my parts combined. So system meaning me as a whole, the entirety of who I am as a being, all of my parts and myself combined. To assist people in understanding more from where I'm coming from when I speak and when we do more of these episodes, when I say we, I do that for the ease of myself, my system, and for you to better understand what it is that I'm saying. If I say I, then I mean myself. If I say my parts, then I mean this is something they believe. This is something that they wanted to express. If I say we, that means myself, my parts, and my system as a whole. I hope that's making sense for people out there. And again, of course, if you have questions or comments, if there is something specific as well that I haven't touched on as far as terminology goes, and you'd like me to add it to this episode, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can tweet us at the We and Me. You can also send us emails with your questions, concerns, comments, suggestions, etc., to theweandmeblog@gmail.com. We've made things very simple for people to be able to get in contact with us. If you're searching for a way to, if you don't remember, or if you hadn't come across this podcast yet, the easiest way to do that is just by Googling or searching on a social media platform, The We and Me. That is who we are. Nobody else uses that name. It's very distinct. Moving forward, the we and me, for example, is something that we use specifically. That is our system name. By system name, I am speaking to who we are. I know that some people have different system names, and I can give you a few examples of that. We know someone who we met online, and they do disclose this, so it is okay for us to share this. They refer to themselves as the chameleon system. We know another group who, and group by group, in this instance, it's okay for you to infer that I am speaking about someone who has DID. She refers to herself as April and the crew. It's not that they have a specific system name. This is just how they refer to themselves. We know some people who use their name, so Jan and the others, or Rod and company. There's different things that people use to express to the public, even without specifically stating DID, that I am someone who is multi-minded. Another example of that, and I know that many of you out there know who they are, they run a YouTube channel, a very popular one because they do a lot of great work, is Jess and her boys. They started using the term on YouTube as Multiplicity and Me. And truly, as far as a lot of the YouTube videos that I've seen, full disclosure, I haven't looked up in a very long time. It's probably been about 6 months to a year that I've been on YouTube specifically searching out different informational channels and that sort of thing, because years ago there just weren't many available that were quality, but Jess and the boys, they do a very great job of explaining DID, getting people to understand her as well as the boys in her system. And if any of you are familiar with them, you'll know who I'm talking about. And then they discuss some of these. You can find out all about them on their YouTube channel, and stay tuned because I am working on trying to get a hold of her or Ed to come on and discuss what it's like for them. because they're another example of a system that is very open and does do advocacy type work. They had participated in a BBC documentary and years ago. That's actually how I first came to find them on YouTube, was because I was recently diagnosed. And again, this was some years ago now, but I was more recently diagnosed and I was trying to fully understand, okay, what is this? Who has something like this? This seems like it's really strange. All the literature that I found say that it's really rare, but when you do the math on that, that doesn't make sense because 10 million people is a lot of freaking people. That was more my earlier diagnosis and trying to just find out as much information as I possibly could and see who has something like this. What are these people doing with their lives? How are they able to function and all of these different developmental things? Because years later, I was in my late 20s and I'm realizing, okay, so I don't actually fully function as a person. It's really strange, but there are so many things that in my mind, in my memory lapses, the amnesia pieces of DID that I had missed, I began to see things in a very strange way, in the sense that I had missed so many different basic developmental milestones where people call them a rite of passage. I'd never experienced a lot of those. So it's very strange to go and see someone in a YouTube video or in a documentary where they discuss some of this. They discuss some about their life and what they experience and these different memory gaps that they've had. Now, Multiplicity and Me, they're a little bit different than my system, of course, because all people with DID can be vastly different. We will have similarities within our systems, so there's going to be similar parts. There is likely similar traumas. Additionally, another piece of DID is that and this is more speaking to some of the psychologists that are listening, because I know a bunch of you are out there, you've contacted us. So speaking more to you guys in this particular section here of this episode, largely within the DID community, DID requires excessive trauma that interrupts developmental years. So by that, it's almost always sexual trauma. And I personally haven't spoken to someone yet who has diagnosed DID that hasn't experienced sexual trauma in childhood. I'm not sure if that is something specific to the DID community, if DID does occur without that aspect of things. But me personally, I have not spoken to somebody yet who hasn't experienced that in their developmental years. Moving on further through with different terms and different terminologies, in the DID community, people discuss dissociation quite a bit because it's called dissociative identity disorder. I just wanted to give a couple basic definitions to people who were curious. Dissociation, defined, is the disconnection or separation of something from something else, or the state of being disconnected. If you're splitting a molecule into a smaller molecule, an atom or ions, especially by a reversible process, something along that line, but that is more specific to chemistry, but just to give you something to associate it with. So dissociation, defined by psychiatry, is the separation of normally related mental processes, resulting in one group functioning independently from the rest, leading in extreme cases to disorders such as dissociative identity disorder. That it is a very out-of-body experience. Your brain isn't actually broken into pieces, but the consciousness within yourself, so your different states of being, because all people have different states, different... I don't mean that all people have DID, that's not what I'm saying. What I am expressing to you is all people have parts. People have different things that make up their personality. Some people might be really, really heavily right brain, while others are super into the left side of their brain. That just depends on the person, their experiences, their environment, what it is that they become interested in as they grow, develop, and live. There can be all sorts of different reasons for this. Some people prefer more artistic outlets, while other people prefer words. People with DID, you'll often find these things are vast across the board in what they are interested in, what they find interesting, but also in their thought processes. People with dissociative disorders in general seem to be on the higher end of the intelligence spectrum. I'm not entirely sure why that is, but one of my hypotheses on that is the ability to dissociate to such a high degree in order to keep yourself functioning and alive and to survive. But also, in many instances, people with DID do thrive through their life in different aspects of it, in different sectors of their life. An example of that would be a few of my parts, because they all worked. They had different jobs. They worked different things. They did. They traveled. They filed taxes. They did all sorts of different things. And now for the ease of life, to facilitate a life in this manner, they tried to do the very best they could to make life simpler for myself, but also for them and the people around me. So what they had done was, in most instances, my parts used my name, for example, at work, filing taxes, all of these variations. And if they got to know people a little bit better, they would use different nicknames is what they would go by. So Jinx is a perfect example of that. Jinx, I had heard people call me several times throughout my life when I was in my late teens and early 20s, and I didn't know what they were talking about, and it was just, I just figured, oh, okay, it's just another nickname that I don't remember. Bob is another example of that. Several people called me Bob throughout my life. It was a nickname in high school and actually before high school, which I'm sure that if people who I went to high school with are listening to this, they're going to be really confused by that because they would assume they gave me that nickname, which is not entirely true. Bob is that part of me's name. And that was a nickname that people used in younger years. And that is my guess, my best guess on that, is because another part had said, just call me Bob. And that's not necessarily because Bob is very social or chatty or talkative, but more so because those particular types of parts would have known that Bob was very intelligent. And if someone called her by name, she would freak out, but she would be around enough to make the others seem less stupid because Bob would have been older than them. And that is just my best guess and my hypothesis on this. I am not positive on that because it just hasn't been something that's come up much in therapy while we have been participating in therapy over the years. So it's just a curiosity to me. So another common phrase to come across in the DID community is co-consciousness. What this is expressing is the presence of one or more of the parts currently in control together, or there is this internal communication that is going on. An example of that would be what I was just talking about with Bob and other parts, knowing that Bob would come to assist them and to give them the appearance of a higher degree of intelligence. That is an example of co-consciousness. Another example of that is current, right now. As I am speaking to you doing these different podcast episodes, it is very rarely, if ever, me, myself alone. I typically will have a few other parts because I am not particularly animated or emotional or entertaining by any stretch of the imagination. I am more tactile, factual based, not experiencing either degrees in emotion. So meaning high levels of joy or deep levels of sadness. That's the simplest terms that I can put it in. With co-consciousness, as I'm speaking, I can very much feel my parts physically. I can feel them. In my face specifically is where I feel Jinx a lot because she animates my face in a way. She will manipulate the muscles in my face to give me a higher degree of emotional appearance to someone that I'm speaking to. So if there was something amusing or funny that was just said, if I said something witty that the general public may find funny and they would laugh out loud, literally, not LOL, but literally laugh out loud to, Jinx will facilitate my laughter. And I know that that may sound strange to some people, but it is very effective. With co-consciousness, that allows us to work together. Now, another problem with that is there can be arguments about how to respond to a situation. Not typically in everyday problems, but it does happen from time to time because all people have disagreements and arguments, especially people who are vastly different, which is the case for most systems. Their parts are drastically different from one another. So another dissociative disorder that people with DID experience, because there are several different types of dissociative disorders. DID, one of those dissociative disorders where people experience many of the others. So dissociative amnesia, dissociative fugue, depersonalization disorder is another one. And it's marked by periods of feeling disconnected or detached from the body and thoughts. This disorder is sometimes described as like a feeling that you're observing yourself from outside your body or like being in a dream. It is very much a dreamlike state. I experience it in many degrees. Specifically, my left arm is a very tricky. I know one reason why I experience a lot more depersonalization in recent years because of my left arm. That is where there is a portrait tattoo on my forearm. Now, I know many things about this tattoo. First of all, though, I didn't get it. That was another part of me who went and got it, and I came back to my arm burning and seeing it, and then there was all of a sudden no pain, and that was sort of an example of depersonalization, but that was also one of my parts stepping in to take the pain because she's the one who got the tattoo. Beyond that, I have experienced depersonalization throughout most of my life. Honestly, countless memories from some of my first memories to my mid-20s, no kidding. The majority of my life, I'm talking about 25 plus years of memories, the majority of them are experienced in a depersonalization way. So it is as I am watching something happen to somebody else's body, or I am experiencing something from above in a very dreamlike state from outside my own body. And that is an important distinction because dissociation isn't always able to be defined as depersonalization or derealization, which I'm going to talk about in a minute here. But depersonalization is a disorder marked by periods of feeling disconnected, right, from your own body and your own thoughts. So intrusive thoughts, and this is another tricky piece of things with DID, is because I also have OCD. I myself am diagnosed with OCD. For anyone who has OCD, you know it's not just washing your hands and that bullshit that they portray on television. OCD is a bitch. One of the big struggles with OCD for me is the intrusive thought aspect of it and the counting. I have actually gotten so lost in my own mind before, and I don't mean in an insane way, that's not what I'm talking about, or hallucinations. I don't experience hallucinations, visual or auditory. I don't experience any type of hallucination. I deal with heavier degrees of intrusive thoughts regarding OCD. And DID, that's a very separate thing from hallucinations. So this is some of the trickiness with it because there are different things that can overlap. When you have someone who has a trauma disorder and a lot of their life was experienced through the lens of trauma, the pieces of that can get really tricky. And this is something that I discuss with my doctor all the time, and several of my parts do as well. One of the questions I always ask, so is this a trauma thing? Or is this more OCD? And then some of you know that her and I, our doctor and I, have been discussing some about the possibility that I'm on the autism spectrum. So is this ASD or OCD? I'm still not 100% sold on that. However, I do understand why she would think that. But one of the big problems is the way that I think, because I can both agree with and explain just about anything that I can comprehend. So if I can comprehend what you're talking about, if I can break it down in my mind and then gain understanding of it further, then I think that is where part of the problem comes in for me specifically. I don't know that I fully agree with the ASD diagnosis. Honestly, it would be almost impossible to tell. However, I find it important to have diagnoses so the person understands what they're combating, what it is that they need to break down to understand how they can process their world and then move forward through recovery. Okay, so I am a person who needs definitions, but is that just simply the way that my brain works and processes information? Or is that a diagnosable problem? And that for me is one of the struggles with this. Additionally, how do you know if that's just not the way my brain operates and the way it functions? Because I don't particularly see a problem with that all the time, because honestly, it has been a problem many times. I have thought myself actually into physical symptoms. I've given myself migraines and physical nosebleeds to where I would get so lost in thought. And this happened more specifically. This was more of a problem when I was young, is that I would think myself into a migraine and a nosebleed. And that became really problematic for a lot of my parts because it was triggering to some of them, which, as you can imagine, is very problematic. One of my parts has consistently said that I was one of the big problems when they were seeking a diagnosis, when they were trying to find help, because, as many of you know, probably most of you at this point, I gave up years before my parts did, because it just didn't make any structural sense in my brain at all to continue trying to find help for something that every doctor before had just shrugged and said, I don't know. I fully did expect one day to hear from a doctor that I had an inoperable brain tumor and I have X amount of time left to live. That never happened. What did happen was we went to the Mayo Clinic, and then some of you may have seen I was tweeting a doctor from the Mayo Clinic the other day. He was actually one of our doctors at the Mayo Clinic, Dr. Ch, and he did a lot of fantastic things for us because he did do all of these different tests, but he also listened to us. He sent us to a psychologist there, and that got tricky, but then it kind of showed him different things, and then when he did all of these different battery of tests, it explained to him, okay, this isn't physical. I don't want people to misunderstand me. I don't have any problem with doctors saying, okay, well, let's try and figure this out. Let's do this, this, and this, and this, because this is what it could be first and foremost. But then when they come back to you, this doctor that we saw at the Mayo Clinic, he didn't just shrug and say, I don't know. He sent us to follow-up appointments. He did different tests. He tried different things, and he listened to us. That is a big difference. If you're not going to listen to your patient, you're just not going to be that helpful. And I think that's a really tricky thing for a lot of doctors is that, well, you're the doctor. You're right. You are. But I live my life 24/7. And the problem with that for me was that when I saw doctors, I explained to them, it feels like I'm not living my life. It's very strange. And when I would explain things like that, they wanted to prescribe me antidepressants. I had been misdiagnosed with bipolar because, honestly, the only reason for that was I was at the doctor's office and I was explaining that I have sleep problems. And he asked, what do you mean? And I explained, well, I'll go a couple days without sleep. And then my body just like can't take it anymore. So then I just kind of pass out and sleep for like 10 hours. Oh, okay. You're bipolar. What do you mean? I don't have bipolar. What are you talking about? Well, does it run in your family? I mean, I think a couple people in my family have bipolar, but oh, okay. Well, it's got to be bipolar then. No, because and again, there are a couple people in my family who do have bipolar. So I was like, okay, well, that doesn't make sense to me because of this, this, and this. Well, no, that doesn't really matter. No, but it should matter. If you're diagnosing me based on sleep problems, wouldn't it be more likely that that's a sleep disorder and not bipolar, since I don't experience literally anything else that would be diagnostic criteria? And the doctor looked at me and thought I was being a smartass, is my assumption, because that's the last piece of that I remember. And then my guess is that Jinx or Stevie or perhaps anger had taken over and told him to fuck off in the way that only anger can. And this is just a guess. So derealization is a type of dissociative disorder that consists of... Derealization disorder is a type of dissociative disorder, okay? We talked a little bit about that. And it consists of persistent or recurrent feelings or recurrent feelings of being detached from one's body or mental processes, usually with a feeling of being an outside observer of one's life that is specific to depersonalization or being detached from one's body. So the important piece there too is the recurrent feeling of being detached. That is how you define dissociation. DPD, depersonalization disorder, is a mental disorder in which the person has persistent and recurring feelings, like I had said. So derealization is where you struggle because you're dissociating from your life. The struggle with derealization is that remove you from the environment. An example of that would be a flashback. But it's not that you're specifically stuck in that flashback. The aspect of derealization that gets dangerous for people. Okay, so some of the important differences there. While you are experiencing depersonalization, you'll become feeling detached from your body, your mind, your feelings, or sensations within your body. Derealization differs in that you're feeling detached from your surroundings. So people that you're talking to, you may begin to feel that you're being pulled further from that conversation. Objects, everything around you. It'll seem unreal. And it's not that you're hallucinating, it is dissociation. Someone experiencing this may feel as if they're in a dream or a fog, or there's something blocking you from the rest of your surroundings, right? So like, you are standing here and speaking to me, everything is going okay. Let's say that I am talking about something and it upsets you or it heightens your senses in some negative fashion, okay? You would begin to dissociate from that and experience the derealization if you were being pulled from me, from the room that we're in, not necessarily from your body, and begin to experience a separation and a distortion of sorts. An example of that would be if you began to see me through like a glass or a veil, your vision becomes foggy. Objects even could become blurry to you. I have experienced this myself, and it is a very unpleasant sensation because A, it was super confusing to me at the time, but now it makes a lot of sense because I do remember different aspects of that and of my surroundings. However, they began to get very, very foggy. So if you know much about photography, for example, in a photograph, if the artist blurs the edges of that photograph and they do it deeper and deeper and deeper and more extreme to where it's almost like a tunnel vision and the very center of the image is more in focus and clear and the outer rim is blurred, or they add like this black cloud around it, which is a vignette. If you're not familiar, it's called a vignette. So it's like it's the heavy black or white surroundings on the image. One thing that a lot of people who experience these different sensations talk about is an out-of-body experience, right? And a lot of doctors, specifically medical doctors, not mental health doctors in this respect, but medical doctors, I have told this to on numerous occasions myself, and my parts have explained this because, again, some of my parts were very much looking to get us help. And one of the problems is if you don't have the language for something, then people aren't going to understand you. But even more problematic than that is when you do say things correctly, and by definition, if they don't have the language, meaning the people that are in charge and they're to help facilitate your life and your recovery, for example, if you're in an ER and you say, I don't really know, but I'm not sure how I got here, I don't remember anything, and they ask you, for example, well, what year is it? And you have to think about it. A lot of the time they go to, okay, that's a concussion. But what they don't do is they don't go further. So one of those issues that we have experienced, that I myself had experienced, is a nurse actually had saved our life before. That had happened on more than one occasion. And again, I found that out via therapy. But for me specifically, one of the instances that I myself remember, and I believe this is the trickiness, is that I know that this happened, I remember it. One of the tricky pieces of that is I'm not positive what hospital it was at. I'm not 100% positive if this was at a Chicago hospital or if this was actually in St. Louis, Missouri, for those who don't know. But we've traveled quite a bit. As you know, we went to the Mayo Clinic in freaking Florida while my parts were working some of that time in these different locations that we did travel to. Another piece of that is while they were doing that, they did that so they could see doctors in those areas as well. And it was just dumb luck that the neurologist at the Mayo Clinic referred us to was in our area. Now, 50-50 dumb luck, because we did, of course, tell him that, yeah, I'm from the Chicagoland area. I currently live in Indiana, though. I'm willing to go to anybody in the Midwest that you think can help me, though, because you don't fully understand how many doctors I've gone to. And he did. He referred us to someone who was within an acceptable distance from us, and we continue to see her still today. Back to some of, after I just went on this big, long tangent and my parts interrupted my thoughts, so I would stop. Thank you, but it's tricky because half that's probably not going to make much sense to you. Talking about DID terms and dissociative terms, we talked a lot about what people refer to themselves as in regards to system, parts, alters, headmates, others, friends, family, relative, brother, sister. It depends on the part that you're talking to, because I know that there are a lot of systems who have siblings within them and moms, dads, all sorts of different things. It just depends on the system. And then there are, of course, animal parts and object parts and all of these different things. Object parts, while they don't always speak, they can. Animal parts don't always speak. Some can. It is very, very specific to each system, because there isn't something that I have seen that has been quote unquote typical of that in speaking with the many systems that we have. And as many of you know, it's roughly around 1,000, a little over at this point, of people with DID that we've spoken to, whether that be via the blog, via Twitter. Now with this podcast, we've had people reaching out to us. There are many different instances. And again, everyone knows, if you're new to our podcast or who we are, the we and me, if you're new to who we are, then I just want to be clear and take a second to state that anyone that we ever discuss has given us full disclosure and full permission to do so. We do not just randomly share people's stories who have messaged us. We make sure that we have explicit permission and consent from them and their parts, their system as a whole, or in some cases, the representative of that system. Whether a part in the system refers to themselves as the representative or not, it varies from system to system. There are some who refer to themselves as the representative. Another of those terms that you may be familiar with is the term host. For me and my system, we don't particularly care for that term. I find the term host, and this is just a me thing, this is just an us thing, I find the term host very weird, because that sounds very fantastical and like make-believe and sci-fi to me. I'm not an alien. I didn't infect this body and puppetize it. I don't. It's a very strange term for me, and if I don't stop, I'll get lost in that. So I'm just going to stop right there with that term. But really quick from that piece, I don't want to get lost, but when people use that term and they ask me, Erica, well, are you the host? Nope, I'm Erica. I'm the person who was born. And I say I am the person who was born, and I don't want people to misunderstand me. I am not someone who holds the belief that when you're born, you have a core, you have a personality already developed, because that just doesn't make sense to me, because you're not working with a developed brain. You haven't had experiences that impact your... I'm very much an environmental impact believer, in that anyone can be anything. When you're born, you're kind of born with a clean slate, barring any physical or mental illness that you're born with, in the sense of physical or mental deficits. If you're born with physical and mental deficits, that's a different story. If you are born healthy, then you are born healthy, and your environment then alters that. But I wasn't trying to make a joke, but you understand what I mean, so no pun intended. However, I struggle with the term host for that reason. I am the person born. So I did grow and develop, but I grew and developed in stop and starts, unfortunately, because of the DID. So my system developed to protect me, to protect each other, and in some cases, as some of you know by now, I do have parts that developed to protect other people, because for whatever reason that is, there are several different reasons for that within my system specifically, because one reason being, again, an environmental factor, I am the oldest. And I had two younger siblings. As some of you know, if you've been following along on our blog, theweandme.com, you have seen by now my post on grief and DID. I am planning on doing an episode about that. I do have a couple friends of ours that we wanted to do kind of like a roundtable discussion on that, because they also have DID and they themselves have experienced grief. So I thought it would be a really good episode to have more of this discussion with several other people on the topic of grief and dissociative identity disorder, or dissociative disorders in general, because experiencing grief, there are 5 stages of grief, but with DID, that it is like experiencing all 5 stages of grief simultaneously, and that can get exhausting. It is of course, painful, but it is such an exhaustive thing. Moving forward, I'm not sure fully what else there is in by way of terminology that I wanted to express to everyone today, but I just wanted to make sure that I got this produced and get it out to you guys because I know that this is a particular episode that we have had a few tweets and emails about from people specifically requesting. Because we have had several people ask, how do you explain this to someone? How do you explain that to someone in regards to people who have DID trying to come out to family and relatives? Having some of those different terminologies is helpful to them. Additionally, a few people had told us when they were coming out to people, they had sent those people to one of our blog posts, and having something that they can send them to is beneficial to them. So if there are questions that come up and they get stuck trying to answer something, they can say, here, listen to this. This may help you better understand, but I don't want to get sidetracked. Let me continue telling you what it is that we've rehearsed and we've discussed that we wanted to get through while disclosing the diagnosis to you, because that can be a really big thing for people with DID, right? A lot of systems that we've spoken to equate it to a coming out experience, as someone in the LGBTQ plus community would discuss coming out to friends or family or whomever. There are people within the DID community who equate it to a very similar thing, and to an extent, I would agree. It's different, of course, but there are similarities that you can draw similar conclusions between the two experiences. Once again, this was Erica from the We and Me podcast. You can find us on Twitter at the We and Me. You can also reach out to us on our blog, theweandme.com. As I stated earlier in the podcast, our specific contact, if you want to reach out because you want to be a guest on the show, or if you have something you want me to add to this particular episode in regards to terminologies, then please don't hesitate to do so. Questions, concerns, comments, inquiries, and all the other fun, amazing synonyms of those words, you can reach us at theweandmeblog@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening to my ramblings. I hope that this episode makes sense to everyone and that it doesn't drive Stevie too crazy while editing. Because, yeah, one of my parts does do the editing for these podcasts. I am not particularly tech savvy. The last thing I wanted to say here for this episode was to give a little shout out to resources that are available to people within the DID community, as well as friends and family members who want to learn more in order to better support someone with DID, other than our podcast, of course. So if you go on Twitter, you can search the hashtag DIDChat, as well as at hashtag the word DIDChat. That occurs every Tuesday. It is a live Twitter chat every Tuesday afternoon. If you go to their Twitter account, again, at hashtag DIDChat, you'll be able to find out more information about them, the specific times that they operate, as well as the systems that created it, because there are three systems that created DIDChat. It's a great resource for people to come together. They have different topics every Tuesday afternoon, as well as the occasional open topic to where you can just come and discuss what's going on in your life. It is appreciated if you use a trigger warning on things that are more difficult for people to listen to and understand. But if you need peer support, that is a great resource on Twitter. The other one that we recently came across is, because I know that some of you know, we've talked a little bit about our experiences previously with Facebook groups and how they can be very, very tricky to navigate for people. However, Alternation on Facebook has been fantastic. As you know, again, Stevie is one of my parts who had been in Facebook groups previously, and they were just not well managed. There was a lot of problematic talk going on. People were being constantly triggered or belittled for various reasons, and it was just altogether a very hostile environment. However, Alternation on Facebook is a fantastic group. You can also find out more information on them and the creator at powertotheplurals.com. That is powertotheplurals.com. And once again, Alternation on Facebook is a great resource for people trying to find peer support on Facebook. And then if you're more inclined to use Twitter, hashtag DIDChat is available to you there. Of course, if you're in one or the other or participate in one or the other, you are welcome to do both. But we just wanted to end today's episode with a little bit of resources for people, because that is one of the other big things that people reach out to us asking about is resources and where do we get our own peer support.
We find both of those places very beneficial. And the thing about alternation that we found differs from some of the other Facebook groups is there are more admins. There are structural rules based in consent that are very clearly and articulately listed out. And there is a system of checks and balances. Consent is high priority, as well as safety of the entire community that participates. You can find out more information at powertotheplurals.com. There are a lot of great resources on there, and I would really recommend people check that place out. So, once again, this was Erica. Everybody have a great day, and I'm going to do our little sign-off here in a second. Bye!
Stay tuned for our next few episodes. Once again, they come out every Sunday, 3 p.m. Thanks again for listening. Up next, you're going to hear, and I know we reuse this song pretty regularly, but you're just going to have to deal with it because we love the song. This song is The Truth Is from Versus the Awake. We hope you guys enjoy it every time we use it because we're going to keep using it because we love it. And then also, of course, if there are any musicians out there, and please, if you are a system or you have a dissociative disorder, if you're a part of the trauma community and you have a song that you yourself created, please don't hesitate to reach out. We did have someone just a couple weeks ago reach out to us, and we are working on going through some of their work, and we will be using their music on our podcast as well. So if you have DID and you are musical, you write songs, you play music, you strum on the guitar. Even if you don't have lyrics, please don't hesitate to reach out to us at The We and Me. Okay, everybody, thanks and have a great day. I hope your week goes fantastic. Boo Monday, but hopefully you'll get through it. All right, everybody, we'll talk to you later. Bye. Bye.
Because I love you. Yeah, you left way too soon. Didn't give a chance to rebound around. What was I supposed to do? I had a guitar in my basement, and I knew how to play it too. And so I wrote some songs that met success, and I tried to have you call, but you were indifferent. So here goes another. The truth is another.
wrote some songs that meant success, and I tried to have you call, but you were indifferent. So here goes thank you.